Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 3, The Widows of Rincon Hill, a tale of horticultural horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 4, The Widow's House.
What's she doing sleeping in the garden? And why is she all covered in mud? She the new widow? Of course she's not the new widow. But she's got a pretty dress on. You can plainly see her dress is green. Everybody knows that widows only wear black. She looks like a horrible pig all covered in mud. She's not wearing any gloves. No gloves! She must be a trollop. Trollop! 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 Trollop!
Yuki's eyes snapped open to find five plump little faces staring down at her through the canopy of deep red petals. She managed to prop herself up on an elbow when the little faces retreated into the blooms with barely restrained giggles.
Hello?
She was answered with a peal of ear-splitting screams as the little herd of children stampeded through the garden back towards the enormous pale yellow house.
Mrs. Crisp! Mrs. Crisp! There's a trollop in the garden!
Yes, yes, Mrs. Crisp! An ugly old trollop! You should see her! She's horrible!
As she sat up, wondering who Mrs. Crisp was, Yuki squinted in the bright morning sunlight that filled the massive garden.
So much for waking up back home.
Yuki had to steady herself as a rush of dizziness came over her. She rubbed her forehead, suddenly noticing how thick-headed and groggy she felt. For a moment, she wondered if this was what 125 years worth of jet lag felt like. Then she remembered Velvet Blackheart and her mother's milk.
Okay, no more late-night excursions to Broadway.
Yuki swallowed at her narrow escape from a life of ill repute, and then noticed the slight soreness at the back of her throat, followed as if on cue by a sneeze.
Wonderful. On top of everything else, I'm getting sick.
She fumbled for her shoes and didn't notice if her feet hurt or not as she laced them up. She crawled out from under the rose canopy, shook out her skirts, and shielded her eyes as she stared up at the house. In the light of day, the three stories of columns and tall dark windows definitely had a less friendly quality than she remembered. The yellow paint was dingy with a heavy patina of soot that ran down the walls in rain-patterned streaks. The garden was a wild, untamed wilderness. There were still traces of a walkway that peeked out from under a tangled carpet of weeds. The flowers had all withered in their beds, and it looked like the nettles had moved in permanently. A disused fountain had dried up and now had a selection of weeds and crabgrass growing out of each of its tiers like an outdoor tea stand. In fact, all of the landscaping had a sort of neglected look, except, of course, for the enormous wall of roses that surrounded the garden. In the morning sun, they blazed as bright as blood, nestled in their shiny dark green leaves. Their dark stems twisted and coiled around the bars of the tall iron fence like thorny serpents, ending in knotted roots that dug deep into the heavy, rich soil. A wall of roses that formed a lush, sweet-smelling barrier between the house and the outside world. The squeals of "Trollop! Trollop!" continued to carry across the garden as the little herd of children waddled along the gravel carriageway and up the front porch stairs until they disappeared inside the house. Yuki took that as her cue to effect a speedy departure. She had only managed a few steps towards the front gate when a voice called out from behind her.
Is that you, Mary? Where'd you run off to the other day? And what time do you call this? You expect me to deal with those wee beasties by myself all morning?
Yuki spun around and saw a small, round woman with broad shoulders and a bright pink face perched under one of the lemon trees. She was dressed in a long, plain gray skirt with a white apron and her hair hidden under a kerchief. She had a woven basket locked in one sturdy arm and squinted at Yuki, who could only guess that this must be Mrs. Crisp.
What's that now, Mary? You'll have to speak up!
The little woman sounded irritated as she dumped another handful of lemons into her basket. Yuki approached and noticed that the woman seemed to be dusted in a fine layer of flour from head to toe.
I'm sorry, but my name's not Mary.
The woman shook her head.
Always mumbling! You'll have to speak up, Mary!
Yuki cleared her throat and spoke as succinctly as she could.
I said, my name isn't Mary, it's Yuki.
The woman hoisted her lemons and took a step closer. She squinted her tiny eyes while she scanned Yuki up and down. She looked like she couldn't see her own hand in front of her face. Yuki wasn't sure, but she thought that Mrs. Crisp smelled faintly of gin.
Maybe you're right. Must be all that red hair. You know, we've had 3 Marys in the last 3 months, all with that same red hair. So it's just as well you're being here, since it looks like the last Mary has run off already. Ugh, I got no time for this fimble-famble. The little beasts haven't had their breakfast yet. Here, you can start by taking these down to the kitchen.
Mrs. Crisp pressed the basket of lemons into Yuki's arms.
But I'm not...
The sturdy little woman was already halfway down the wild garden path towards the back of the house. She looked over her shoulder when she saw that Yuki wasn't following her.
Well, come on now, girl. Stop dawdling.
The walkway snaked through the garden. It winded past a neglected carriage house with its empty stable and attached workshop. The workshop's door was ajar, and a flash of copper caught Yuki's eye. A few steps later, she saw the enormous gleaming kettle that instantly reminded her of her tea girl days at the Bell Fair.
Could they have one of those crazy tea makers as well?
Mrs. Crisp plodded down the small flight of stairs that led to the expansive kitchen. Yuki followed as the wall of heat suddenly hit her. It seemed to radiate off of the shiny white-tiled walls. Countless copper pots and saucepans gleamed on their shelves, while a formidable cast-iron stove sat center stage, housed inside a massive tiled fireplace. There was a long, scrubbed wooden table where several loaves of freshly baked bread were cooling, as well as wire racks crowded with little pies and tarts. Yuki's stomach growled as she set the basket of lemons down. Mrs. Crisp began to busy herself. She disappeared through an archway into a large pantry. Shortly after, she re-emerged with a bowl full of eggs, a slab of bacon, and links of sausages draped over her shoulder. She looked over at Yuki, who was awkwardly perched near the end of the table, eyeing one of the apple tarts. Mrs. Crisp chuckled as she shaved off slices of bacon, which sizzled as they landed in her frying pan.
Go on, dearie. I suppose one won't be missed, and you look like you could use it.
While Yuki happily chewed, she became aware of a strange metallic clicking sound coming from somewhere behind her. She spun around and spotted the old-fashioned bellboard hanging over the entrance to a small stairwell at the back of the kitchen. At some point, the bell for the room marked nursery had been unceremoniously removed, leaving only a mangled and twitching stump of wire. Before Yuki could ask, 2 plump little faces had appeared on the small stairwell.
Mrs. Crisp, we've been ringing and ringing. We demand to be served our breakfast immediately.
Yes, this delay is simply unforgivable.
Yuki thought that the boy and the girl must have been twins. They both had the same blue eyes and pale blonde hair, as well as the same little upturned noses. Then another pair of faces appeared. This time the girl was a little taller than the boy, but they both had the same dark chestnut brown hair and eyes ringed with hollow circles like they had been up all night reading.
Yes, Mrs. Crisp, we're famished and ravenous.
Positively assuriant.
They were joined by a curly red-haired boy who was nearly one big freckle with a considerably smaller vocabulary.
Mrs. Crisp, I want lots of butter and marmalade on my toast.
Then the big freckle noticed Yuki and pointed.
That's the trollop from the garden. What's she doing here? Why does she get to eat apple tarts for breakfast?
The pack broke up into giggles as Mrs. Crisp shot daggers in their direction.
Now that's enough of your noise, you beasties!
She looked over at Yuki and sighed.
You see what I've got to contend with around here? A house full of orphans who don't know how good they've got it. The tow-headed little lord and lady are Oliver and Opal. The deadly dark-haired duo are a million miles. And the freckly one is little Nigel. And they all know what happens if they get caught prowling on the servant's stairwell.
Little Nigel protested.
I wasn't prowling. I was just hungry.
Yuki may as well have been invisible as far as the little pack of children were concerned. Their attention seemed completely focused on Mrs. Crisp and her slow progress with their breakfast. Then Oliver turned the other boy's attention towards the trays of pastries, and a plan of covert action instantly formed. Nigel led the way as the pack began slowly closing in while Mrs. Crisp stood at the stove with her back turned. The apple tarts were just in danger of vanishing when she suddenly spun around, brandishing a rather sinister-looking toasting fork.
I see you over there, you mongrels! Be off with you now, and make sure you wash them grubby little hands before breakfast is served!
With a burst of squeals, the children instantly scattered and scrambled up the back stairwell. Mrs. Crisp began to arrange trays and serving dishes, as well as several pots of jam, complete with little Nigel's marmalade, when from across the kitchen, the bell for the morning room began to ring.
blast! That'll be the ladies gagging for their morning scandal water.
She began spooning out the tea leaves, first into a large teapot, followed by five smaller ones, each on its own little tray. She removed a steaming kettle from the stovetop and began expertly pouring the piping hot water into each without missing a drop. As the bell for the morning room continued to ring, Yuki was startled when she noticed the tall woman who had suddenly appeared at the foot of a larger staircase across the kitchen. She was reed thin and wore a simple, plain gray dress, similar to Mrs. Crisp's uniform, except for a lacy collar and cameo pinned at her throat. Sadly, the dainty touches did little to soften her appearance. Her seamed face was comprised of a long, sharply pointed nose, narrowed cat-green eyes, and a thin mouth that rarely saw a smile. Her dark hair was split down the middle with a shock of silver and pulled into a rather severe bun. Her voice was a low purr, which perfectly complemented her slightly feline appearance.
Mrs. Crisp? Running a bit behind already, I see. The ladies are getting restless in the morning room, and the little savages are in the children's parlor screaming blue murder for their breakfast.
At the stovetop, Mrs. Crisp purposely flipped her sausages.
Oh, you're so helpful. What a darling.
Her theatrics went unheeded as Mrs. Leech's cat eyes flashed on Yuki and her green dress.
And what do we have here? A titch formal for the kitchen, don't you think?
Mrs. Crisp waved her toasting fork in Yuki's direction.
Oh, that's just the girl with the same hair as Mary's. Only her name isn't Mary. It was some foreign sound and whatnot.
Mrs. Leech's thin lips pursed as she shook her head. Yuki awkwardly set the remainder of her apple tart on the edge of the table.
I tried to tell her. My name is Yuki. Yuki O'Malley.
Mrs. Leech's thin eyebrows arched.
I see. I believe Miss O'Malley will suffice over the course of this interview.
Yuki looked confused.
Interview?
Yes, of course. You are here about the chambermaid position, aren't you?
The green eyes narrowed as Yuki's mouth sort of flapped open and closed, while Mrs. Crisp barked from across the kitchen.
Scullery girl? We clearly need a scullery girl before some old chambermaid.
Mrs. Leech's expression became glacial.
That's quite enough, Crisp. Thank you.
Mrs. Crisp rolled her tiny eyes and glumly resumed skewering slices of bread, while Mrs. Leech led Yuki up the larger stairwell towards the front of the house.
So then, Miss O'Malley, do you have your letters of reference? What about any experience as a lady's maid?
Not exactly.
Yuki felt muddled under the direct gaze of Mrs. Leech. She was suddenly aware of the soreness in her throat again, the thick-headed feeling that just made her want to lie down. Mrs. Leech's green eyes flashed. Clearly, she was not impressed with Yuki's silence.
I suppose I needn't bother asking based on the appalling condition of your gown. Indeed, one wonders how you came to possess this season's Charles Frederick Worth at all, even if it does look like it came off of a drowning victim.
It belonged to my grandmother, actually.
Mrs. Leech looked skeptical.
Grandmother, indeed. Well, I'm sure it belonged to somebody before you peeled it off of them. I'm sorry, Miss O'Malley, but we've already had enough trouble recently with flighty girls.
Mrs. Crisp's head suddenly popped up in the stairwell behind them.
Oh, go on, Leechy. Have a heart. I'm already run off my feet, and it's not even time for luncheon yet.
Mrs. Leech bristled as there was a loud knocking at the front door, followed by a stampede of little feet and squeals from down the hallway.
There's someone at the door, there's someone at the door.
Millie and Miles came barreling out of nowhere, followed by Opal and Oliver. They each smashed their little faces into the front windows for a better look outside.
It's a telegraph boy!
And he's got a horse.
Of course he's got a horse. What else would he have?
Little Nigel had just rounded the corner in time to bump into Mrs. Leech and her withering gaze. The pack instantly fell silent and disbanded back towards the children's parlor. The lanky telegraph boy in the rumpled wool suit delivered his message and even managed a little smile at Yuki through the sliver of doorway which Mrs. Leech allowed. The front door thumped shut, and Yuki found herself once more under the uncomfortable scrutiny of those cat-green eyes.
It seems Mrs. Crisp has taken a shine to you. Let's introduce you to the ladies and see what they make of you.
Mrs. Leech led Yuki down a long hallway, past several richly appointed rooms where every doorway was draped in tasseled velvet. They passed the children's parlor, and Yuki noted the tumult of overjoyed squeals which indicated that Mrs. Crisp was finally serving the beasties their breakfast trays. At the end of the hall, they arrived in a pleasant-looking room with upholstered walls of bright yellow damask that shimmered in the morning sunlight. The room was heavy with the sweet smell of roses, yet there didn't seem to be any fresh flowers in sight. Then, all at once, Yuki realized where the scent was coming from. In stark contrast to the cheery room were the two little old ladies sitting opposite to each other, dressed head to toe in black. Mrs. Leach's tone suddenly sounded very light as they entered.
"Good morning, ladies. The tea is on its way, and we've just had a telegraph delivered."
"Is that what all the ruckus was about?"
asked one of the ladies.
"We thought that Mrs. Crisp might have forgotten the marmalade again."
The other lady chittered. When Yuki got a better look at the two little ladies, her eyes went wide. She had seen these two before. In fact, Yuki vividly remembered the evening when both of them had crumbled to dust before her very eyes and the entire curse castle had gone up in flames. It was the widows, Carstairs, and Bilsey. Mrs. Carstairs had the same wide, watery blue eyes framed in a careful arrangement of baby-fine golden curls. She motioned to Mrs. Leach and snatched up the small brown envelope. She smiled as soon as she had it open.
"It's from Scylla! Bibi, we've heard from dear Scylla!"
The widow Bilsey was a squarish woman with hard, flinty eyes and two rows of little brunette sausage curls that bounced on either side of her face as she leaned in.
"Did you say Scylla already? What does she say? Has she made any progress?"
By the time Mrs. Bilsey had gotten her spectacles in place, Mrs. Carstairs' smile had fallen. She flipped the paper over as if she expected to find more.
"Bibi, I'm afraid our dear Scylla has already arrived in New York."
Mrs. Bilsey took the paper and read the short message.
"Arrived in New York this morning, taking the overland route immediately. This journey has left me deeply vexed. S.G.
The paper crinkled as she frowned.
"She's been gone barely 2 months. I wonder, Ellie, what could have happened?" "Oh, who knows, Bibi? But if she's on the overland, it means we've only got 8 days. We won't nearly be ready by then, will we?"
"I should think we're doing rather nicely this time around. We might actually be ahead of schedule."
"Yes, I believe you're right. It is most astonishing, isn't it?"
"We'll just have to get young McDurch around to see to getting the roses prepared.
And in the meantime, Mrs. Crisp will just have to double her efforts, and it will all work out splendidly."
"Indeed."
Then Mrs. Carstairs suddenly seemed to notice that Mrs. Leach and Yuki were still standing in the room.
"Yes, Leach? Was there something else? Oh, and who might this be?"
Mrs. Leach prodded Yuki from behind.
"Well, girl, speak when you're spoken to. Tell the lady your name."
Yuki was still trying to wrap her head around the sight in front of her as she struggled to answer.
"O'Malley? My name is Miss O'Malley."
Mrs. Carstairs looked doubtful.
"Are you quite all right, my girl? You've gone so pale. You look like you've just seen a ghost."
Yuki tried to answer, but had difficulty forming the sentence. Suddenly, she was keenly aware of her constricting gown, especially the merciless grip of her corset.
"I'm sorry. I'm not feeling very well."
Mrs. Bilsey looked disgruntled.
"What's the matter with her, Leech? Is she some sort of simpleton?"
Yuki struggled to take a breath. She felt like all the wind had been knocked out of her sails as she began to sway. The rose scent became sickly sweet, and the ladies' voices, as well as the bright yellow walls, began to swirl in Yuki's head, as she suddenly realized that the cheery room's plush carpeting was rising up to meet her.
"I think I'm going to..."
Everything went black as Yuki fainted and collapsed on the spot. The black 67 GTO sped along in the light late-morning traffic on the upper deck of the Bay Bridge heading into the city. Danilov Derwinter sat behind the wheel, growing a little fatigued after several hours of driving. The chorus of snoring emanating from the passenger seat wasn't helping matters. Danilov looked over and grimaced at the sight of Audra Lamal asleep next to him. Her middle-aged mom glasses were askew, and the cheap wig had slid sideways as her head lolled in her car seat. Behind the pink cubic zirconia butterflies, underneath half-lidded eyes, her golden irises flitted back and forth. The snoring would occasionally give way to unintelligible muttering and strange guttural sounds as she stumbled along in her dream. The sight made Danilov chuckle to himself.
Never wake a sleeping dragon.
At his big brother's request, Danilov had personally seen to Audra's unscheduled release from the Halcyon Valley State Hospital. It had been relative child's play to infiltrate the facility with forged credentials, as well as a convenient map of all of the hospital's outdated electrical systems. A few crossed wires later, and the place had gone up like matchsticks. As they exited the Treasure Island tunnel and the city came into view, Danilov's gray eyes went wide.
Would you look at that?
A delicate flurry of snow had started to fall, drifting down in a fine white curtain. It was already starting to collect on the roadside and even along the bridge's guardrails. Danilov switched on the windshield wipers and guided the GTO over, headed for the Harrison Street exit. He let the passenger side tire thump over a pothole, and Audra was jolted awake.
What's that? What's happening?
Oh, good. You're awake.
It took Audra a moment to get her bearings. She straightened her perky bob and sat up in her seat.
I must have dozed off. Where are we?
Danilov looked over and smiled.
We're almost home, dearie.
The GTO glided down the off-ramp and turned onto Harrison Street, where the sidewalks and parked cars had already begun to frost over in the falling snow. Audra blinked with disbelief.
Merdolo, how is this possible? It never snows in the city.
Danilov nodded.
First the rainstorms, then the earthquakes, and now this. Makes you wish old Mortmain was still around, doesn't it? He'd be able to explain what's going on.
At the mention of Mortmain, Audra involuntarily began to nurse a sagging eyebrow behind her glasses.
I can't believe he would just leave us without a word. Are you sure he flew the coop?
As far as I can tell. Dez and I drove up to Reno last year, and he'd already checked out of the Osiris without a forwarding address. His entire suite was empty and wiped completely clean.
Audra tisked as her finger withdrew and her eyebrow sagged.
Such a shame. Monsieur Mortmain was so handy to have around.
The snow continued to fall as the GTO slowed and turned down a familiar alleyway. Audra sat up in her seat when she recognized their destination.
Are you sure this place is okay? Won't the cops be looking for us here?
Danilov shook his head as the car slowed in front of the chain-link gate topped with its coils of lethal razor wire.
Nope. Believe it or not, Detective Golden and his squad of thickheads never found out about this place. Dermal and FEMA fixed up the rest.
Audra nodded with a look that said, say no more. Danilov fished out a remote control from the glove box, pressed the button, and the gate began to rattle open. The snow had already formed a perfectly white carpet as the GTO crept across the empty yard, disappearing into one of the old warehouse's parking stalls as the gate closed behind them. Audra shivered as she gathered the lightweight physician's coat around her and exited the car, pointing herself in the direction of the industrial stairwell.
I hope the accommodations are as luxurious as last time, darling. I am simply dying for a long, hot bubble bath.
Well, that blue-haired demon trashed the place pretty thoroughly when she broke out of here last year. But we've got the place more or less fixed up now. And you'll be happy to know that we've even managed to save all of your wardrobe.
Audra was too cold to display the appropriate gratitude about this as her teeth began to chatter. When they reached the top of the stairwell, Danilov paused as he fumbled with the keys. He had a puzzled expression as he flexed his fingers several times and then frowned.
That's strange. For a second there, I thought I felt a twinge.
Audra's teeth continued to chatter.
Probably just overdoing things lately, yes? I know I'm ready for a holiday after all this crazy-making.
Danilov finally managed to get the key in the lock, and they entered to find the warm and opulent comforts of the restored hideaway. Audra thought it looked pretty much the same as it had before, except, of course, for the portion of roof which had been newly reconstructed. The ultra-modern kitchen, the lounge area, and dining room were all beckoning with their creature comforts. Even Danilov's small glass tank with the iron reinforcements had reappeared, complete with its strange murky liquor within, swirling and splashing, as the tank's tentacled occupant, who went by the name of Chaz, seemed to be happy at Danilov's return. The new flat-screen TV was flashing a news report about the freak snowstorm gripping the city. Oddly enough, it looked like the storm seemed to be centered only around San Francisco, with normal weather moving over the rest of the Bay Area. Audra and Danilov were transfixed as they watched the broadcast. when a tall, gawky teenage boy wearing a bathrobe entered the room. He smoothed his pale silver hair back.
You think that's bad? You should try dealing with pimples when you're already 147 years old.
Audra and Danilov spun around and gaped at the sight of a spotty teenage Desmond Derwinter. Audra was shocked beyond words as Danilov panicked.
How did that happen? When I left a week ago, you were still looking like a toddler.
Desmond sighed.
It doesn't take a snowstorm in San Francisco to tell you that something's gone out of kilter.
He winced as he doubled over in pain. Danilov reached out to catch him and helped him over to the sofa.
What is it? Are you all right?
Desmond hissed through clenched teeth.
Another growth spurt, I think. They've been getting more frequent recently.
Desmond broke out in a cold sweat as he disappeared in the sofa cushions. As the news report continued, Audra saw that Danilov was flexing his hands again. She appraised him over her glasses.
Not you too. I managed to escape from the loony bin, only to get here and find everyone falling to pieces. Merdalo, some homecoming.
Audra's golden eyes suddenly went wide as a realization set in. She tossed her glasses aside and turned to a mirror. She lightly hoisted her eyebrows up with her fingertips, and her lips parted with an evil smile.
Well, we'd better figure out something quick, because as far as falling to pieces goes, you boys ain't seen nothing yet.
And so, Chapter 4 comes to a close. Special thanks go to guest voices on this episode, Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and at comptech.com. For more information, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 5. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.